Turn your Bibles to Ephesians chapter 6. Ephesians chapter 6. We're winding up our teaching. You all, if you want, you don't have to be on the front row. As a matter of fact, if I'm not speaking, I usually sit in the back. So I understand. Don't feel self-conscious on the front seat. But if you like the front seat, that's fine with me too. We've been looking at Ephesians, but we're about to switch. For the next book we will be doing will be the book of Acts. The book of Acts is a bridge between the beginnings of what Jesus did and how the church started and spread throughout the Roman Empire. And it's a very interesting book, 28 chapters, and we'll be starting that as soon as I finish this series in Ephesians, but I'm in no hurry because this book ends with something that every believer should realize. We do not wrestle against flesh and blood. Now, it's not very clear in your English translations, but Paul is making it very clear in the original language which he wrote, which is Greek, that he's telling you that behind all the evil things we see in this world, and don't we see a lot of evil things? It may well be spiritual forces of wickedness. We wrestle not against what? Flesh and blood. We've taken you on a ride. I've decided we'll go into the Old Testament, same thing in the New, that on occasion, doesn't always happen, our physical world is impacted by an unseen world, invisible, that somehow, for a brief period of time, the visible world interacts with the invisible. We live in a world where we have to put food on the table, where life is mundane, but the best trick that these wicked forces ever did was to convince you that they do not exist. Paul said we do not wrestle against flesh and blood. And by the way, Paul would know, everywhere he went, he got himself into trouble. He was stoned, persecuted, jailed. And you know what he said? That ultimately behind all of that, it was not mere human event. There were spiritual forces. What have we seen so far? Well, we've seen that when man and woman were created, that first assault against God began. We took you from that to the flood. Everybody's so used to Noah's Ark and the little animals getting invited in. Little do they know that now you know the sons of God were not from this plane of existence, came into the daughters of men which were on a physical plane and produced hybrid creatures. Do you find that? If you think about that, that'll shake up your world. The flood didn't happen for reasons, they're never told the real reason. Spiritual forces of wickedness, invisible forces that inhabit another dimension, came in to mingle human DNA and angelic, artificial, whatever it was, DNA. You start thinking about that and you realize what this world looks like on the surface is not what's behind the scenes. Then we went and we were in Genesis 19. So we're going to go back there. I haven't finished the story. Genesis 18. We were in Genesis 18 where we have the next big interaction of unseen forces that are able, get this now, we're now learning that this invisible realm, we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but principalities and powers, has the ability to leave that realm and come into our dimension. That which is invisible can become visible. Now, you don't want to chase this. The Bible warns, don't go after these kind of things. Be aware of it. Know that there is more to this world than meets the eye, but you don't want to be pursuing communicating with spirits. More people have gotten themselves into difficulty. And that's why the Bible warns against doing this, because the Bible calls these type of things deceitful. More people have gotten themselves into difficulty pursuing this kind of thing. Just be aware of it and know that when there is upset toward God's people, bottom line is spiritual forces are at work using human forces. And that human forces are mere instruments. And there's nothing we can do about it. How do you like that? Except put on the armor of God when we get there. Just know it exists. And we live in a world that is much more complex than the oil change you need at 5,000 miles on your car. Weird. Anyway, chapter 18, Abraham was out in Palestine, no one around. He looks up and there are three persons. They look human. They are dressed like humans. They can speak Abraham's language. They wear the garb of the day. They would blend in anywhere, except they suddenly appear out of nowhere. He's nodding off in the warm afternoon, and all of a sudden, as his head goes down and wakes him up, right in front of him are those three persons. Now, what the Bible is telling you is that this can happen. It doesn't happen often. You don't want to chase it. But we live in a much more complex universe than what you would imagine. And as last week we found out, these beings, one of which is God Himself, which could tell you that God is able to take on human form if He wants. I don't think He does it often. Angels, His ministering spirits, are able to take on human form. Take a look around. Hebrews says we entertain angels at times unaware, and this is what Hebrews is referring to, leaving open the possibility. Now, I didn't say it was probable. I said it's possible. It's very rare. But it can happen. God Himself. You know, I've often chuckle when I say these astronomers look up in the sky and say, "Where is God?" Well, guess what? At the Oaks of Mamre, there He is. If God wants to, He can check things out. Now, that's interesting, because why would God need to check anything out? If He's omniscient and omnipresent, why would He need to do this? Well, I can't answer the why, but I can tell you, if He wants to, He will. And He visited. And so Abraham, as we saw last week, did something that they all do in the Middle East. He gave them lunch. They ate. Now that's weird. The creator of this universe actually sat down and had lunch. He didn't need to eat, but He could. That's our glorified bodies, by the way. Jesus, after His resurrection physically, sat down and fed the disciples breakfast. John 21. We will have glorified bodies that don't need to eat, have miraculous properties to them, but can, because Jesus said, in the kingdom, we would sit down with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob and celebrate the kingdom. So after that, there's a conversation. You remember that conversation. Abraham has no idea who these people are. He didn't live in California. You know, if someone showed up at your door in California, you wouldn't answer the door. All of your cameras, your Ring thing that you can get at Costco, you'd be looking on your iPhone wondering who's that at my door. These three guys, you would think they were salesmen. Well, you couldn't do that in those days. And they sat down, had lunch. But it took them time to condition Abraham to realize who they were. So slowly after lunch, they start revealing that we're not just mere visitors. Sarah is given a prediction. 1 year from now, you'll have a child. Sarah, at this time, she was 10 years younger than Abraham, but Abraham at this time is approximately 99. Sarah is approximately, if my math, and remember now, I have to have a calculator. It used to be a calculator watch, but now it's my iPhone that will give me the calculator. She's 89. Now, God deliberately waited until it was humanly impossible. The plumbing didn't work anymore. Nothing worked. They were in no shape to have children. She has Isaac. Conceives Isaac 89 years of age. How old are you? Now, Abraham had had Ishmael. Biologically, men can father children longer. But at 89, Sarah is not able. 89 was 89 in those days. And when she hears it, she laughs. Well, if you were three strangers, what's the best way you could tell them that we who are visiting are much more than you realize? When she laughs, God makes them name that child Isaac. For the word Isaac means you laughed at God. Don't we laugh at God? This story is telling you that God is able, if He wants, to do a lot more than you realize. He doesn't often do it, but He sure can. And He tells them in verse 14, there's nothing too difficult for God. That would tell you that God is referring to Himself in the third person. Verse 16 is where we left off. For there were two purposes of these persons. One was to visit Abraham. By the way, that's why Abraham is called a friend of God. We're about to get into, do you know where in the Bible says Abraham was a friend of God in James and other places? We're about to get into the story of why. What can you do with your friend? Well, you can eat with your friend. You can, to use the Yiddish term, kibitz and talk, have fellowship, and with a friend, your friend will usually let you do things that they wouldn't normally on a normal scale. Abraham's about to bargain with God. Now that implies that if you're a friend of God, God listens, and He will actually give in to Abraham's reasoning. God is not unreasonable. So let's watch this conversation. The Lord tells him that you'll become a great nation. But I'm here to inspect the world. And I've heard about this place called Sodom and Gomorrah. Now, when I was in seminary, they taught me God is omnipresent, omniscient, everywhere present. That's true. Sometimes theology is too simplistic. For though God is omniscient, omnipresent, everywhere present, knowing everything, he can come down and check things out. That's weird. If you were God, what would you check out today? Think about this. This is implying that on rare occasions, God is going to do this. Where would you look? Well, what seems to get God's attention is behavior that really he doesn't like. And it says here, and it's weird, in verse 21, the outcry of Sodom and Gomorrah is great. Their sin is exceeding. I will go down now and see if they have done entirely according to the outcry which has come to me. Whoa! Wait, God, you're omniscient, omnipresent. The Bible says that, and yet in the same sense, God can come down and get a first-hand look, taking on the form of a human. How does that work? I don't know. This neither violates God's omnipotence, omniscience, or does it violate the fact that God can do this? But I'll tell you what gets God's attention. And that is behavior that is so bad that he's going to check it out. That's interesting. You got to ask yourself, this story is not in Genesis just for, why did they pick this story? Well, it's warning God's people to be careful how you walk. Because at Sodom and Gomorrah is Abraham's nephew. He's in Sodom and Gomorrah. And we got to ask ourselves, Abraham and Lot separated, but what's Lot doing in Sodom and Gomorrah? Well, he's having a good time. And Abraham really isn't so much concerned about Sodom and Gomorrah is that he knows God's about to do something. He's getting the hint, and he's worried for his nephew. By the way, you didn't call up your nephew in that day and say, you better get out of that place. Also want to let you know that Sodom and Gomorrah has nothing on what we live in today. Actually, they're mild compared to the sin and disobedience that this world is in now. So what stops God from pulling the hammer? We're in the age of grace. God is waiting for the last person to come to Jesus, and then the hammer drops. That's why we're seeing God not react. Paul said, now is the day of deliverance and salvation, and then all of a sudden, the door will close. You don't know when that door will close, but what makes you think God hasn't checked out some things? I know there's several things I'd like to check out. Because what gets God's attention is, if it gets so bad, he comes down. And what it's saying is, when God judges, what this story is actually also telling you is, when God judges, he has full knowledge when he takes that judgment. He's not just up in the sky, in the clouds, hearing. This story is actually telling you that God has firsthand knowledge of everything that goes on. Even to the point where if he wants, as weird as it sounds, he can check things out. And yet he doesn't need to. But he's about to do something that many people aren't going to like. So to make sure that it's very clear, when judgment falls, God isn't arbitrary in giving that judgment and letting it fall. He has complete knowledge of why judgment must fall. Man, what must he see in Vegas? Forget Vegas, Los Angeles. Forget Los Angeles, New York. Forget New York. You know all the stories I tell you. Has God ever checked those places out? Do you think he needs an Uber? I doubt it. Wherever he wants to go, he's just there. Have you passed him? You wouldn't know. Isn't that weird? I have to come to grips with this story myself. For God's going to check it out. But Abraham is called a friend of God. And so God says, here's what I'm going to do, Abraham. You're my friend. And friends tell friends what they're going to do, don't they? The God of this universe was such a friend of Abraham. And the Bible says through Jesus, you can become a friend of God. That he actually sits down and tells Abraham what he's going to do. I've come down because I've heard about Sodom and Gomorrah. I've seen the sin. And I will know. In that verse 21, the word know means full intimate knowing in Hebrew. Then the men turned away from there and went towards Sodom. Two of the angels departed that looked like humans, started walking down there. Why did they walk? They didn't need to, but this story is here to tell you reality is a lot different than what your average day is like. Abraham and God are still there, and with a friend, you can bargain and talk, and that's what Abraham does because he heard. Where are some of your relatives? Los Angeles, Northridge? How about Burbank? So what would the Baradases do knowing that Willie's sister is in Burbank and God would turn to him and said, I've heard some about weird things about going on in Burbank. And Willie would think, well, my sister lives in Burbank. Wait, don't do that. My family's there. And God lets him bargain. That's weird. It's much more rich a walk with God than you realize. We have some gods on this high, exalted throne. That's partly true, but he also intimately is involved and friends of his can bargain. And as they turn to go towards Sodom, the Lord is still standing there. I wonder what he looked like. What color eyes do you think he had? According to pictures of Jesus, Jesus has long hair, blue eyes, thin, 70s hippie-ish. I sincerely doubt that. He looked Middle Eastern. As a matter of fact, if Jesus actually came into our church and looked Middle Eastern, Cheryl would say, Pastor Dave, call the Oxnard police. I'll pick on Cheryl. She'll let me do that. But he would look just like us. Look around. We have visitors here today. So Abraham, knowing the implications of this, came near, which means he got right up close to God. What would it be like to stand within a foot or two? Lord, will you indeed sweep away the righteous with the wicked? Now, he now fully realizes that what he's staring at, you, if you went like this to God's shoulder, you'd feel probably bone and muscle. And he starts bargaining. Lord, there are righteous people in Sodom. and Gomorrah, would you kill them all? Well, I guess if I were God, I would have said, well, what are the righteous doing there in the first place? But I'm glad God is God and we're not, because God is more merciful than you are. It's why I'm glad, forgive me, Christian, but I'm glad fundamentalists aren't in charge of judgment, or there'd be a lot more dead people around. God is very merciful, slow in anger, abounding in mercy. Even the mercy of letting Abraham bargain with him. Wait, are you going to kill both? And God doesn't stop this conversation. Why? Because Abraham's a friend of God. How do you become a friend of God? By faith and trusting in Jesus Christ. Abraham trusted God, and it was reckoned to him for righteousness. There are 50. If there are 50 righteous within the city, how many people did Sodom and Gomorrah have? Thousands. Tens of thousands. So Abraham starts out low. He's about 50, my guess would be, because he knows that Lot's entourage of family and servants, daughters and son-in-laws, couldn't be more than 50. So he narrows it down and knows that he's got to bargain carefully here. 50. Will you sweep it away if there are 50 righteous who are in it? Far be it from you to do such a thing, to slay the righteous and the wicked, so that the righteous and the wicked are treated alike. Don't do that, Lord. Shall not the judge of all the earth deal justly? And the Lord said in verse 25b, how dare you talk to me that way? No. I'm glad we're not God. Would you take the lip like that from someone? He's a friend of God. You can be a friend of God through Jesus Christ. So the Lord said, Abraham, I'll tell you what. If I find 50 righteous within the city, then I'll spare the whole place. Now, let me thank God that God is God and you're not. I have heard from Christians for so many years, God will have to apologize to Sodom and Gomorrah if he doesn't smoke these people. And thank God for 50 righteous people. God is merciful and he will spare even wickedness if there's a few righteous. Thank God that God is God. He's merciful. But if some of us had our way, it would be like a Monty Python show where God would be taking this fire stick and killing everybody. Do you see what this is saying? For 50 righteous, God would spare Sodom and Gomorrah. Thank God. Thank God. That means this. There's enough righteous people still left around that God is forbearing his judgment. That shows you he is merciful. 50 out of tens of thousands, God said, okay, if I find 50. You know what the sad thing is? He couldn't even find that. But Abraham knows, let's see how, you know, Abraham was a nudge. So he nudges God. He argues. And Abraham answered and said, now, don't take this as disrespect, God, but in verse 27, I am but dust and ashes, but suppose you can't find 50. Now, he knows there ain't 50 there. And I use ain't as an emphatic. I know it's not grammatically correct, but some English grammar person told me I can't say it. And the more you tell me I can't say it, I ain't going to go down that path. I'm going to say it. It's the rebellion in me. Suppose, Lord, if there aren't 50, will you destroy the whole city because of 5? I love this. None of you, if you were God, would put up with the lip that Abraham, nicely, you'd all go, I'm God, you're not, stop it. But he's merciful. This tells you the character of God. If you know Jesus, you can talk to him. Pour out your complaints before God, it says, he can help. Will you destroy it because they lack 5 of the 50? And he said, I will not destroy it if 45 are there. But Abraham knows there isn't 45. Why? He probably went and visited sometimes. And he spoke to him and said, well, 45 or what if 40? Suppose 40, Lord. Down 5 again. And he said, I will not do it on account of 40. Now he's got God down from 50, 45, 40. Then he said, what a nudge. Don't be angry with me, Lord. And I think the Lord had a little twinkle in his eye as Abraham did this. It's my imagination as a preacher. Suppose, Lord, there are only 30. Now down 10. Let's see if we can go a little bit better with God. This is telling you that if you're a friend of God, God understands your weakness. He knows perfectly well, and frankly, he's humoring Abraham. Okay. Tell you what, since you're my friend, Abraham, for you, I won't do it. For 30. I will not do it if I find 30 there. And he said, now behold, I ventured to speak to you, Lord. Suppose 20. Down another 10. He's gotten God down 30. This story is here to tell you that it says in James, we can be called the friends of God. Just like Abraham. I will not destroy it on the count of 20. Now you got me down 30. We're less than half. And I love it. Then he said, oh Lord, don't be angry, but how about 10? Because that's about the size of Lot's immediate family. And guess what, guys? God says, all right, Abraham. Though there are tens of thousands of wicked people, for 10 righteous, I'll forbear judgment. I am so glad that God is judge and we are not. Because I've seen many harsh religious people wanting God's vengeance. Here is the heart of God. Even if there's just an eensy-weensy little bit, he'll be merciful. I would much rather have God in charge than us. As soon as he had finished speaking to Abraham, the Lord departed. Now that's what's weird to me. The other angels are walking down the path. This conversation has gone on for probably 10 or 15 minutes. They're down there. God doesn't disappear. He starts walking. Why? Explain that to me.
I don't know.
Now, if you're going to make up a story like this, why in the wide world would you make it up like this? You'd have, and God floated off, turned into a Star Trek sparkle and left. God started walking away. Really weird. But when we get to 19, only two angels are there. Well, if you ask me, the two angels were there because God had already done the checking. And by the way, God had already known there aren't 10 there. And the angels were there to do something that he knew Abraham wanted. And that was to get Lot out of there. And that's another thing I like about God. He knows how to rescue the righteous. Get them out of those situations. The two angels are there to take Lot and his immediate family, less than 10, and get them out. For God's about to do something. And there it is. These angels are on a rescue mission. Now let's look at this story. Now the two angels came to Sodom in the evening with angels' wings and a halo. You know, that's where we have one-dimensional thinking. We often think angels must have wings. a halo and be dressed like angels. This is telling you no one recognized them as angels, and they didn't look any different than you and I do. So don't be trying to find angels all the time, but remember this, you never know. You never know. And they came, and Lot was sitting in the gate of Sodom. Now let me tell you, you probably don't know why immediately that that's very significant, because we've lost culture. And a lot of preachers don't explain the Middle Eastern culture. No one just sat at the main gate of the city. Only the prominent citizens, the city council, the judges sat at the entrance. This is where, you know, up Victoria, Sandy Hatmaker used to work there. What is that up Victoria by the 126? That's what the city gate was. They didn't have a building per se. They had a city gate that had a bazaar and awnings, and all the prominent people sat there to decide the issues of the city. And Lot is sitting at the city gate. You know what that tells you? Lot was fully involved with the life of this city, including being one of its most prominent people. How righteous could Lot be, being that involved? But the Bible calls in 1 Peter, righteous, 2 Peter, righteous Lot. And that's good news for us. How righteous could Lot have been in a city like that? But God calls him righteous Lot in 2 Peter. And when Lot saw them, he rose to meet them and bowed down. He didn't know they were angels. It didn't say, "Hi, I'm an angel." Middle Eastern people, when they saw strangers, were friendly. Today, if they knock on your door in California, so one thing I don't want is someone on Sunday afternoon knocking on my door to sell me something. But in those days, they were friendly. And Lot sees two strangers. He rose to meet them and he said, "Now behold, my lords, please turn aside into your servant's house and spend the night and wash your feet. Then you may arise and go on your way." And that's what people would do in that culture. You'd invite, there were no motels. Motel 6, Hilton Inn, nothing like that. People took people into homes. Would you like to take people into your home? We live in a world now where if you do your DNA, you may be related to a serial killer. That's how they find... There was a murder in 1980. Alan said you remember that 1980 murder up off of Victoria. They caught that guy. They caught him through DNA. So we live in an age now where you go to a motel, man. I don't want him in my... You just don't know what you're dealing with. But these people took them in. They said, however, "No, we will spend the night in the square." Now, they deliberately did that because they knew the city was wild, and they were actually inviting trouble. Lot's trying to protect these people. "Come to my house, you'll be safe." Yet he urged them strongly, so they turned aside and entered his house. Now, let me tell you one thing. Angels don't need a tent, but they can spend a night in your home. And the angels can be bargained with a little bit. They can eat. This is their second meal we know that angels can eat. He baked a feast for them, made a feast for them, unleavened bread, and they ate. And before they lay down, the men of Sodom surrounded the house. Both young and old, from every quarter. Now, what this is telling you is the pervasiveness of the bad behavior. And they called to Lot and said, "Where are the men who came to you tonight? Bring them out that we may..." And what does your translation say? Huh?
"We may hold them hard
Ooh, that's... we're all adults here. They were quite edgy. And it is a sexual connotation. So they see two new guys that they haven't seen before. Novelty engenders more novelty, and they actually want to, how do I put this delicately? They wanted to force coaches back from Illinois. This is very strong language. They wouldn't have wanted to do that if they knew who these people were. So if you tell me angels don't look like anything special, did they have muscles? But like Arnold? Steroids? That's why he had a heart problem and had to have surgery. Steroids destroyed the heart. Did they have muscles and look like I want to pump you up? They just look like average guys, is my guess. But Lot went out to them at the doorway and shut the door behind him. And he said, please, my brothers, do not act wickedly. Notice he calls them brothers. He knew them. Now, behold, I have two daughters who are not have had relations with men. Please let me bring them out to you. What in the world? I'll tell you what, as a dad, I have three girls. And I would tell them, if you don't back away, but to show you the depravity of Lot, he's offering his own daughters for these people. Now, righteous Lot. But that's what the Bible will call it. I'll give you my daughters. I want to slap him. I sit my daughters down and I tell them, you don't trust any man. Don't I, Sandy? Sorry. You watch them all. Isn't that terrible to teach your kids that? But that's what I do. Because if you love your kids, why would you let idiots like this? I mean, this to me is, it just shows you how much the conditioning of the culture had gotten into Lot. And he, here, please, do to them what you want. Don't do it to these men. And I don't even know if Lot knows these are angels. Because if he knew these were angels, he would just say, I wouldn't mess with these two guys. But he didn't. And here's what the angels said. But they said, get out of our way. And they said, this one came in as an alien and already he's acting like a judge. So guess what? You know, you want to be friends with the world is to be hostility with God. And when it came down to it, these guys were no more friends with Lot. They wanted to do whatever they wanted to do. In verse 9. We'll treat you worse than them if you don't get out of our way. So they pressed hard against Lot and came near to break down the door. Don't you understand the wanton depravity of this? For two strangers. But the men reached out their hands, brought Lot into the house with them, and shut the door. Now, why did they shut the door? They could have just dropped these guys right there. It's weird how... And then verse 11, they struck the men with blindness at the doorway, both small and great, so they wearied themselves trying to find the doorway. That means this, even while blind, they still wanted to have their way. And the men said to him, Lot, who else is here? As if they didn't know. A son-in-law, your sons and your daughters and whomever you have in the city, bring them out. For we are about to destroy this place. So that tells you this. God has a lot of patience. But when he's reached his limit, you ever tell your kids, I'm reaching my limit. You push me any farther, you never know what God's limit is. And once he's reached his limit, ain't no turning back. For we are about to destroy this place because their outcry has become so great before the Lord that he has sent us to destroy it. I'll be honest with you. I am really shocked as what I hear on news and TV and what I see that God hasn't done something. And then I think, you know, that's good news. Because God is patient. And he forbears his judgment. You say, who is he to do something like that? Well, he's God. He can do what he wants. The idea today is, who are you to judge me? Well, we don't judge anybody. Jesus said, all judgment has been given to him. Judge not, lest you be judged. So when you see people doing crazy things and God's hand is not coming down on them yet, thank God. There's hope for me and hope for you. And I'm glad that God is merciful and you're not. But the point of this story is, when he's ready, look out. So Lot went out, spoke to his sons-in-law, daughters, let's get out of here. But verse 14, but he appeared to his sons-in-law to be jesting. Well, don't you look like you're a comedy when you tell people, you know, there's coming a day when Jesus will judge this world? You're a religious nut. Guess what? God isn't bluffing. He's just forbearing. And when it dawned, the angels urged Lot, get out of here. And he hesitated. Lot, what in the wide world were you doing there? So the angels had this that looked like men seized his hand and his wife and his daughters. And if you ask me, the son-in-laws were at the barbecue that morning. And it so happens, God said, don't look behind you. And you know the story. Sodom and Gomorrah went up with smoke. So what do we learn in this story? And next week it's going to be another story before that the world is a lot more unusual than you know. That angels and God at times can check this place out. We don't know when they do it, but they can. And you never know when you're sitting on a bus, on a train. You never know what's around you. By the way, we also know from Genesis 6, that spiritual forces of darkness can take human form. Tell me we don't live in a strange world that looks mundane to us, but we need to watch very carefully and know that this does go on, even though we may not even be aware of it.